are listening to Teacher Toolkit, supporting teachers, parents and students worldwide.
I think that initial bit of when you get asked a question and sometimes you don't always know the answer.
Right.
And almost kind of starting that conversation.
Yes.
With, I'm not sure, but let's put it out. And actually, how do you think?
Yeah.
Because in a way, it reflects the fact that I don't know all the answers and I shouldn't know all the answers.
Sure.
We help teachers thrive and survive with classroom ideas, cutting-edge school resources, and research-informed teacher training materials. You will also hear discussions on the policy, guidance, and research-based publications.
This week, listen to Ross McGill, founder of Teacher Toolkit, interviews Ubeda Limbada, co-director of social enterprise based in Birmingham, Connect Futures. To this date, they've trained over 40,000 students. In today's podcast, some of the things we'll be discussing are using research to inform policy and practice, creating relationships between the police and local communities, and building resilience against violence and extremism.
Hello everyone, this is Ross at Teacher Toolkit, the most influential blog on education in the UK. Today I am interviewing Zubeda Limbada. Hi Zubeda, how are you?
I think I'm very good actually. Looking forward to this discussion that we're going to have.
Could you introduce yourself to listeners and tell everybody what you do?
So I'm Zubeda, I'm director or co-director of a social enterprise called Connect Futures. Mm-hmm. We're Birmingham based, we work nationally. And what we do is we do training and research around tackling extremism and exploitation.
And how did the organisation, the enterprise, come to be?
So like with all good, and I use the word good in quotes, things, everything has happened, I think, in my life for the last 10 years by accident, and not, certainly not by design. So I guess it's one of those kind of questions that you read about where people sort of say those sort of jobs that you tell young people to kind of think of are not jobs that will be there,
yes.
Might not even kind of be there. So, for example, if you had said to me when I finished uni that this is the area where that you'll be in, I'll be like, what do you mean, counter-extremism, counter-terrorism, mm-hmm. kind of all the lexicon that didn't really exist at the time. So,
sure.
I think what I did want to do initially was to go into politics. I studied politics and modern history at Manchester.
Okay.
And I guess I was driven by the aspiration of doing things positively within communities or making a change in people's lives. And then I went travelling to the Middle East for a while, came back, moved from Bolton to Birmingham, as you do, worked with council. And then suddenly, around that time, I think it was a war in Iraq that was happening.
Yeah.
I used to go to lots of demonstrations. I was there on all the marches that were happening. And also, I was, I guess, impacted by the fact that there were things that were happening in my community within the Muslim community in terms of perceptions and kind of what was happening globally was influencing us in terms of Muslims, but also wars. Are they right or wrong? Where do we lie on these things? So then around that time, 2011 was in power, the Prevent strategy came around, I think 2006, and I asked at work if I could be seconded onto the Prevent program, which was a pilot. And really the journey starts from there. I started the work, and then I also had the opportunity. I met police officers for the first time in my life who I was having coffee with. I know that it's as bizarre as it is.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of kind of conversations around, are these police officers spies? Why do they want to have coffee? There was a lot of talk around foreign policy. Anyway, I got the opportunity to have a secondment with Westminster Police with their counterterrorism unit.
Okay.
It was a very interesting world. It's very male dominated, for example. There's also kind of, I don't know, there's a lot of, you have perception of how police officers work.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because two of my brothers are police officers in Manchester, and my last deputy headship was around the period of Jihadi John when he was an ex student at the school in Westminster. So, that was pretty full on when we had international media outside our school doors for a good number of weeks. And then I believe when they the American military force dropped bombs, then the cameras came back. So that was a very interesting period. So tell me a bit about the Connect Futures I get the moral purpose. What's the practical stuff that you deliver?
The practice is kind of around doing kind of undertaking research. So we have a team, core team of four individuals, mixture of people who are academic through to practitioners. And what we do, there's two strands, doing training and then undertaking research around extremism and exploitation. Our wider aspiration is around how do you use research to inform policy and practice. And the reason, again, we set up the organisation was the fact that we felt that there was a lot of reaction when it came to extremism.
Yes.
And so how could we, again, use that research that was happening? How do we connect communities with police and be part of those conversations? So not being done to, but again, partnership. So we, when we go into schools, which has evolved in the last 2 years for us, again, we would do something, either 60-minute workshops for either students or for teachers on extremism, through to more bespoke programs. So again, it could be around hate crime, it could be around radicalization, and we adapt the content that we have, usually slides, for the audiences that are happening, to the conversations that are actually happening. So whether it's far right, Islamist, a lot of conversations around hate crime that are happening, and then having trainers who can answer some of those questions.
So how many schools have you been in, you know, last couple of years, for example?
So we've, I think our stat is we've trained over 40,000 young students.
Wow.
So that's quite a lot. And I think it's been a really productive kind of process. Again, if you'd mentioned that 2 years ago, I'd have killed for those stats. But also kind of working with teachers and students, the kind of the differentiator there. In some ways, I do probably, the hard work is done by the trainers when it comes to young people, because it's making sure that the credibility that they have translates into young people listening and interacting as well.
So I'm looking at your course on your website, the Brave one, Brave Resilience Against. Tell us more about that particular course that you can offer for schools.
Yeah, so that's Building Resilience Against Violence and Extremism.
Yeah.
And we're delivering that in conjunction with St Giles Trust, who are London-based. So initially it started off the pilot in Birmingham and London, and it was almost a 90-minute programme. It was very distinct, sort of gangs and knife crime, and then our kind of work around extremism.
Yeah.
But now, in the last year or so, we've harmonised and themed. So you still have two trainers with the two themes, but we use overlapping factors like the grooming line. We're also kind of, again, how recruitment happens, both online and face-to-face, how you're targeted.
Okay.
There's a lot of overlapping factors, and I think we're still not there discussion-wise, not just in schools, but with wider society.
Yeah,
when
you get
the headlines, it's like, oh, that's knife crime, that's different.
Yeah.
Extremism, that's different as well.
Right, so this is a teaching podcast, so I want to take you back to the time when you were at school. Describe to us your education journey.
Oh, blimey. So, primary school.
Yes.
Was up north. I love the north, so I will be an advocate for the north.
Whereabouts?
There. In Bolton.
Okay.
Went to an inner city school.
Right, my mother lives in Rochdale, so I'm not far from family home.
Still different, but yeah. And for me, memories are just very happy growing up in primary. And in a way, it's kind of how it should be. There was no limits on what you could do, and the teachers were very encouraging. And all I remember, and again, I keep recalling this when I talk to my niece, is I had a terrible maths teacher, but terrible in the sense of she was amazing.
Right.
And as a result of Mrs. Mort, I learned my maths timetable.
So what made her terrible?
She was really
held you to account, made you learn?
Yes.
Okay.
She made us learn it by heart, and we'd have tests every other day and by rote, and you learnt it.
So how good's your maths today?
If you ask me any of my timetable, I will know it 7 times.
Right, good, because Nick Gibb refuses to answer any multiplications questions on the television.
So he should have had a Mrs. Moore in his school. That's all
I can
say.
Well, there's a good tip. So where was secondary, in Birmingham?
Secondary again was in Bolton.
Okay.
And I had a mixture in terms of I went to a comprehensive school. Then I had a 2 year where I went to an Islamic boarding school over in Kidderminster, where my education was interrupted. It was a religious school, but at some point I got kicked out, out, came back to Bolton again, managed to get into doing my GCSEs, and then went to college in Bolton as well.
Okay, can I explore that little period where you got kicked out? I'd be naughty of me to ignore that. What kind of things happened?
I think I just lost interest in, I guess...
Was it the environment or the school?
I think it was
school?
More a limitation in terms of the educational aspirations within kind of a non-Islamic environment.
Right.
So I think because you're still learning about the world, for me, with probably very few options to explore in my own head because I was in a new environment and it was a boarding school and what have you, I think I just lost interest probably on the Islamic bit of it. In the sense of, I just wanted to do my GCSEs, and I wanted to go to university. That's all I knew.
So you know, Bolton and Birmingham are, you know, are pretty diverse places today. What about, you know, when you were back at school, you know, 20-odd years ago? Can we just briefly talk about diversity and racism?
Yeah, so for me, up north, I had lots of racist experiences, and it was part and parcel, particularly in secondary school. It was a given, and you just handled it. And again, you had to, unfortunately, dish it out. You had to be tough. And really, you were the answer in terms of how you responded to it. So you could either ignore it or you kind of had to be angry and respond. And I was the latter. I think some of that has shaped probably who I am today as well. Okay. So my toleration for racism is very low.
Okay.
And I am that person who will call it out.
Right, of course.
And also, when it's unfortunate that we're still having some of these discussions around...
Yeah, no, it is. And your work with kids today in schools, you know, I've been in schools 25 years. It's very live and kicking today, the topic. What do kids tell you day to day in your work? In terms of racism, diversity?
So I think, again, this is something that regularly crops up, is it shifted from when I was young to from where it was straight up racism, you would call certain names, to Islamophobia or kind of, again, even homophobia, which is probably, I think, homophobia is also kind of emerging and I'm probably less qualified to talk about it in terms of language and how we shame people. But in terms of racism, I think it's evolved, Islamophobia, and it's less kind of direct. So again, you're not sure what you're dealing with in terms of feeling being made to feel different as well. And again, I wonder if teachers sometimes also have the answer because racism has evolved in its subtleties and its differences, how do we talk about it in terms of understanding it and respecting young people's experiences now? And the other factor is also, and again, I have no answers, how do we deal with social media in terms of young
people? Well, I was going to ask you about social media. You know, one point in diversity, you know, at least in the teaching profession, it, you know, whether it represents the British population or certain communities is still up for question. But on social media, what's your views on how this has changed the world or specifically this topic that we're talking about and how it impacts on children?
Again, it's super complex, so I couldn't do any sort of provide any sort of meaningful insights. But I think for me, social media, whether it's on racism or whether it's on extremism, I think my observation is the fact that as adults, teachers, for example, we only provide advice around how we consume social media.
Mm-hmm.
And young people are consuming social media so differently. They're far more of the experts in this. And so therefore, answers are not really based on actual experiences of young people who we tell not to do something or don't go on this. So we can provide general safeguarding, kind of don't do this, but actually I think I'm shocked sometimes by the fact that the very basic two apps, for example, whether it's Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Some people might say, I've heard about that Twitter, but I don't know how it works.
Yes.
So then, again, how are you giving advice? And it doesn't mean that you need to have an account, but how it's consumed and then the impact, particularly, you know, whether it's around bullying or all these other things, how are you in a position to provide advice? There's lots of work that social media companies are providing in terms of, again, how do you educate kind of yourself online and provide tools?
Yeah.
So how is it that we're giving young people a safe space in as much as we don't understand what that space is?
Yeah, no, I frequently talk about, there's a great book I'm reading called The Cyber Effect by a lady called Dr. Mary Aitken. I strongly recommend it. It's quite a frightening book to, I listened to Audible actually, I don't know if that classifies as reading. but she talks about really interesting things such as cyber psychology, cyber migration, you know, the dark web. You know, we're living and using social media in a time where it's broadly unsolicited. You know, and I sometimes struggle as an adult to deal with how to respond. So if I'm 12 years old, I've got no chance.
And the other difference also within that is if you were 12 years old, but when you as an adult, when you were 12 years old, you weren't dealing with the media as such, or social media.
Yes.
So again, how are we listening to young people and their experiences who have never been offline as such? Within that.
So on that note, what's the one thing you'd like to see change at a ground level in schools based on the work you do with kids?
I think on reflection, it would be around safe spaces.
Yeah.
And what I mean by safe spaces is not kind of like the
politically
correct aspect. But just kind of, I think there isn't enough time, and there isn't enough time for reflection. So, again, where critical thinking is, where people can, again, almost position an argument to kind of then shape how young people are allowed and how we give them the tools to think, where judgments aren't made. And then, again, it's repeating what may or may not be done in schools, whether it's debating societies and all those kind of aspects. But, again, how is it done more kind of... In a way that young people feel kind of being listened to. And the reason I say this is because we faced a very minor kind of conversation in our own workplace as a small organisation. So how we get interns coming in and what have you. And this thing around if a young person says to us that they feel feeling anxious or, for example, mental health problems, how do we as a small organisation deal with it as opposed to just saying, well, we didn't have these things, or just get on with it attitude.
Yeah.
And again, I've spoke to some young people to kind of make sure that we aren't diverging from where how we should be more empathetic as an employer.
Okay.
And I feel that, again, how do we – I'd love to learn more from schools in terms of how they deal with these things. as opposed to just sort of dismissing kind
so
of where
– So you mentioned time, and you're in schools a lot, and my passion is reducing teacher workload. What's your – you know, if workload continues to be a problem for teachers, have you seen, and what are your insights on your travels, the pressures that you, or the things that you most commonly hear back from teachers in your work?
I'm probably not qualified to answer that, only because we only go in for a certain amount of day in a school, so it's almost like you're in and out. So we don't see any of the workings.
So, well, let me change the question. What's your favourite part of working in schools with kids?
I think that initial bit, when you get asked a question and sometimes you don't always know the answer.
Right.
And almost kind of starting that conversation.
Yes.
With, I'm not sure, but let's put it out. And actually, how do you think?
Yeah.
Because in a way, it reflects the fact that I don't know all the answers and I shouldn't know all the answers.
Sure.
And then there's that moment when you're like, what, you know, again, you're always like wanting to not feel uncool.
Yes.
So I think those are the little bits that are.
So I guess a bit of honesty is what kids need also, that, you know, we
all the answers.
Yeah, absolutely.
But at the same time, and that's okay to kind of express in that environment where I think I'm always conscious of the fact that I'm not their age, obviously.
Yeah.
So, and because we're sometimes working in work environments where you can't say that sometimes.
Yeah.
So again, that vulnerability of how you feel is important as well.
Okay. One last question on Connect Futures. What's the kind of next big goal for you? Is it to grow the organisation, to publish more research, to get into more skills? What's the kind of...
Yeah, we would like to grow our organisation. So we're very small. We have bigger ambitions, but also kind of, again, unless you've got the funding coming in,
yes,
we can't grow. So I think we would like to take on more employees and also do more research. So I think, for example, what you've seen in this week's news around the Streatham attack and stuff like that, we would like to be in a more of a position where more of these kind of conversations are actually happening that we're influencing and being part of. But at the same time, we want to make sure that the conversation and the discourse isn't divorced from the fact that what we're doing in schools, for example, the preventive work is part of that kind of kind of societal question as well.
One more question, just fascinating. So, the Streatham attack and, discourse about prisoners' intervention, early interventions, what are your views on the work that you've done so far and any suggestions for government level?
Well, I have a huge list here.
I'm sure we can be here for a long time.
If I just narrow it down, I think it's the bit that we're on the Brave project that we talked about earlier, where we do both gangs and extremism. I think it's important that we start shifting where there's a lot of duplication in terms of because we separate the two issues. So there's a preventative side that we need to be better rather than being reactive would be one important consideration. The second thing is we've got around, I think, 250 terror offenders in prisons.
Right.
So we can't start making policy based on one attack that took place.
Yeah.
Because that's knee-jerk, it's bad policy, and it doesn't work. We've actually got to have, again, better understanding that, for example, just locking people up or giving longer sentences doesn't mean that you've solved the problem.
No.
There's a lot of experts who've worked in prisons,
yeah.
whether it's kind of cut, whether it's rehabilitation, do programs work. So I think we've got to, again, as communities, as kind of educators, I think rather than, and where we're at, for example, when I use that horrible word, Brexit,
yeah.
we've got to be a less of a knee-jerk, responsive, yes, this is a solution, because actually we've not had the conversation to kind of be in a position to inform and use that critical thinking to kind of start that discourse and actually sort of prevent from one way isn't just about preventing people. Actually, there's a big conversation. So, for example, when we've been into schools, a really important question that keeps cropping up, particularly because of the political events, has been around Shamim Begum.
Yes.
And so young people recognise the picture when we show it.
Yeah.
There are some elements where people feel like, could this happen to us, particularly from a minority community? Or actually, if I say this, will my teacher ask me more questions after the session? So what is it that, again, what's the starting point for a lot of these discussions? Why are people having these discussions? So, again, the policy isn't divorced from the reality of where...
Yeah, it's very complicated. I remember at the time when we had Jihadi John and we started the initial prevent stuff before it happened, and then, got a lot more deep and meaningful, and we raised all sorts of cans of worms. And I think looking back at, schools are always limited by time and resources, and I definitely think we were out of our depth. It'd be interesting to see how far the strategy has evolved, and I know it's still got mixed messages many years on, but how that also, including your organisation, supports schools in a very difficult
topic. Adding to that, I think some of the shift that's happened has been around, and I put this as a challenge also to your listeners. So whilst we talk about prevent and extremism, we sometimes wrongly assume that it's just about Islamist extremism. We also have a rise in far-right extremism.
Yes, we do, yeah.
So my question always is, and I have never had a kind of a brilliant response because perhaps there isn't one.
Yeah.
We talk about far-right extremism and communities. So, for example, after an Islamist attack, we sort of say the Muslim community needs to do more.
Yeah.
So that's our knee-jerk response. So when there's a far-right attack, which community are we talking about?
Well, I look at Katie Hopkins now, and I'm just in...
Whose community is it?
Oh, yeah, exactly. Well, it's embarrassing. It's embarrassing as a human being, never mind as a white British person. But there's just no place for it, full stop, in society.
There isn't a place, but at the same time, the bigger question is how are we talking about it?
Yes.
And what are the uncomfortable bits that we do need to address within that?
I find it absolutely abhorrent that she had a million followers and people were laughing and jeering her on. And then there was that video that came out the other day.
Yeah.
Some social media guy had published something and I watched it and I thought, oh, my God, it's just shocking. So then that side of social media starts to become edutainment in some respects, mm-hmm. when actually the conversation's much more complicated and a much more important matter. So very complicated and fascinating. So we've gone past the 20-minute mark. I'm going to stick loads more light-hearted questions at you, and I want, in kind of Timmy Mallett fashion, I suppose, no pause or hesitation, if possible. So let's see if you're up for that. And I'm going to put my countdown music on to distract you. So first question, Zubeda, what's the current project you're working on right now?
Contextual safeguarding.
Okay.
So workshops in schools, and it's about both gangs, extremism and violence.
Okay, great. Well done. What's the book you're reading at the moment?
I've just bought a book to read called People Like Us. The author is Hashim Mohammed, and it's around social mobility and his journey from being a refugee to now being a barrister.
Okay. Piece of advice for someone starting a social enterprise?
Blimey. Okay. So it's not as glamorous as it looks.
Yeah.
There's a lot of hard work that happens behind the scenes, and don't be shy when a director is not just the person who's fronting the organisation, but also writing the invoices,
yeah.
working hard at night, and actually wondering where the next bill is coming from as well.
Yeah, well, I know that feeling very well. So if this wasn't your dream job, what would it be?
Do you know, I hate these questions, but I have no answer to that, so I'm going to absolutely fail.
Right, fine.
If someone said, would you like to be, I don't know, the head of NASA, I'd be up for it, because right. I wouldn't have a clue, but I guess who does, right?
Well, creativity, open door there, isn't there? What's your biggest achievement?
Again, I hate this humble yeah. brag stuff. However,
go for it.
I have met Obama twice.
Right, twice?
Once in the White House and once at the UN.
Wow. Okay, who would you recommend I interview next and why?
I think the guy that I mentioned in the book who's written People Like Us, Hashim Mohammed, and I think he's written, in terms of the content, prior to the research in his book, he's spoken to a lot of schools,
yeah.
he's a mentor, and I think he'd be ace for your audience, and he's someone I listen to quite regularly, so
okay.
obviously I'm biased.
What do you do to relax?
Relax? What's that? Actually, I have learnt how to relax in the last 2 years. Parkrun. I hate running, by the way, parkrun, but I did my first marathon last year as
right.
well, which was a major achievement.
I've seen on your Twitter feed, well done. what's the key piece of paper that you would like everyone to read on Connect Futures?
Our interviews with Form Extremist.
Okay, so I'm going to go and check that one out. Where can listeners find out more about you? Kind of
go on our website, www.connectfutures.org.
Okay, and yourself, Twitter, LinkedIn, things
oh,
like
yeah.
that?
I think it's Zubeda Limbada.
All right.
Zubeda Limbada. And I'm usually waffling and I'm usually angry at the world, but there you go.
Fine, right, I'm going to pause the music for the last question. What would you like your legacy to be?
Leave the world in a better place.
Okay, fantastic. So, Ben, it's been a pleasure to chat with you. Thank you for at least allowing us to explore the initial Connect Futures and that very complicated world of extremism and things that we can do to make our society a better place. Thanks for your time.
Thank you very much as well. Had a lot of fun.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To continue the conversation, head over to www.teachertoolkit.co.uk and our social media channels to access all the links and resources mentioned on today's show. Why not share this with your colleagues and give them the gift of time, reduced workload, and increased impact? Until the next time, before you look after your students, look after yourself.